Merħba għal program Minajnejn Barrani fejn jiena kol il-Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kulnata tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. In today's edition of Minajnejn Barrani, I shall be speaking to Ingrid Iomois, who has been in Malta since the year 2000, is originally from Estonia, and I'll leave it to her to introduce herself and say what she does for a living and the reason she came to Malta in the first place.
Thanks, Colin, for having me. It's a pleasure. As you mentioned, I've lived in Malta for a while now. I moved here 15 years ago, year 2000, so I've been here quite a while. I first came here in 1999, when I was still a student at the university in Estonia, to work in the tourism industry. I worked as a rep with Estonian tourists, and I fell in love with the country, and I moved here a year later after graduating university in Estonia. And I've been here ever since. Past years now, I think might be 7 years, I've worked for the British Council and for the past 3 years as the director of the British Council.
So that's what you do. You're the director of the British Council in Malta. Just a quick aside, some people might think the British Council, you're Estonian in Malta, I'm sure it's the kind of question you get very often, or perhaps not.
Yeah, you're not the first person to ask that, but I mean, usually I say just why not? Because the British Council is an organization that promotes the multicultural approach and diversity and cultural relations, and looks like they thought that I would be the best person to do that job in Malta.
So what you're saying is the British society is multicultural and very diverse, and in their positions, even overseas, the British government's representative office is, whether in culture or whatever, should also be multicultural, diverse, as long as the person is the best person for the job.
Yeah, I think it didn't really matter where I was from when I was selected for the job. I guess they were just looking for particular qualifications, maybe particular personality, and the nationality, I don't think it was important at all.
Right, so we'll talk more about the British Council and its work later on. We are recording this program, and it should be broadcast in November of 2015. And this is a very busy time for you, with the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting happening in Malta. The British Council is very much involved. We'll talk about that a bit later. Let's go back to you, Estonia. Did a lot of Estonian tourists come to Malta in 1999 when you came here as a representative?
Well, not that many. It was only for a few months. Well, it was a long time ago, but we used to have, I think, maybe 100 people a week for a few months. But not that many Estonian tourists. Malta is a wonderful destination, but I think it is and always will be a sort of a niche destination for a cultured traveller. I mean, it's not a place for a beach holiday. Clearly, we lack the beaches here for that. But it has so much more to offer.
Are you saying the beaches are not big enough?
Yeah, I mean,
because people do say we have beautiful waters,
yeah.
Scuba diving. That is quite popular, a popular part of Malta's tourism product.
Yes, that's true. But would you come here only for a beach holiday? Probably not. You'd find a cheaper destination elsewhere, in Canary Islands, for example.
Or
the Greek islands. Mm-hmm. I'm not here trying to say that Malta is not worth coming to. The opposite. Malta has so much more to offer than just beaches. And I'm saying that with a bit of clout here because I'm also a licensed tourist guide. So I'm working with tourists from Estonia and elsewhere, and I see how much they love Malta, how little they knew before they came here. But all of them, they completely fall in love with the place because it has such a wonderful architecture, the hospitality of the people, and the place is very charming.
And that's the reason they come here.
Yeah, I think so, and I'd like to encourage everybody, and I do encourage everybody who hasn't been to Malta yet to come here.
So, 1999, when you were asked to come here, did you know anything about Malta? Had you heard of it before?
Mm-hmm. When I came, of course, I did my homework because I had to show people around here. So, I knew about Malta then. But before that, my mom came here in the beginning of the 80s, I believe, on a Mediterranean cruise. So, I remember her memories of that, how she spoke of Malta when I was just a little child. So I had this distant memory. Of course, when she came to see me years and years later, she said Malta had changed so much that she did not recognize it.
This was 81 when Estonia was still part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah. Yes, this was still then, and it was a miracle she got on that cruise.
Yes, wasn't there a problem? Weren't tourists sort of not, wasn't foreign travel discouraged in those days in the Soviet Union?
I mean, I guess the selected few could travel. I think my mom must have been just really, really lucky because she was not a member of the Communist Party. Mm. So she did not support the communist system. So it must have really been a miracle of an oversight, probably. But here she came, and we still have some Maltese towels at home from 1980s, and I forbade my mother to throw these away.
That's magnificent. What a wonderful souvenir. So you came to Malta in 1999. What was the very first impression of Malta when you came off the plane?
I think now, should I be honest?
Or please do. That's the whole point of the program.
Or should I be polite? Mm-hmm. Okay, let me be honest then. I mean, it wasn't love at the first sight, perhaps. I really didn't like it. Because it was, when I first arrived, yes, it was July. It was July 1999, and when I arrived, I saw this barren, brown island. The heat, to me, then, was unbearable. People seemed very loud. Perhaps.
They still are.
Yeah, but now I think I've got loud myself, so so it doesn't really bother me anymore. I had worked in the Mediterranean before, you know, so the loudness wasn't the main issue here. It was this total lack of greenery,
which has improved.
I think my perception has improved of Malta, and now I know there are other seasons. There is spring. There is winter, but then it was just this July, this never-ending July, followed by never-ending August. And I really hated it. And later on, then when I started studying for my guiding course, you know, I laughed when I found the report of the Order of St. John, when they sent some people down before they moved here.
In 1530.
They sent some people down here, you know, to check out the place. And they hated it.
Yes. They discouraged the order from coming here.
Yes. But yet they came because obviously we know they had no choice. Mm-hmm. You know. But when I read that report, I said, how little had changed? You know, how much I felt the same way that these people in the 16th century. But we all know that the order stayed for 268 years, and they fell in love with Malta, and so did I.
That's a charming story. Let's go back to Estonia for a moment. Tell us about where you're from in Estonia and the kind of life you lived there, the kind of environment you lived there. Obviously, the reason that you found it such a contrast when you came here. Mm-hmm.
I'm from Tallinn, from the capital of Estonia, but my family, we always lived in the outskirts of the city, so we always had a big house and a big garden much more affordable in Estonia than it is here, of course.
Still.
I mean, land is an issue, of course. In Estonia, we have 28 people per square kilometer living on average. Here, over 1,300. So there's a difference. Yes. There's a difference for you. So, I mean, I grew up in a big house with a lot of greenery, with a lot of space, with a lot of private space to be on your own. Perhaps it is difficult to understand, but it really is a huge difference. It really was a huge shock to me when I moved Malta. I was a grown up then. I was young, obviously, but a grown up, that you're never really alone in Malta. And this both shocked and amazed me. Now I've just got used to it. Sometimes I wake up at night just to be a few hours completely on my own.
So because Estonia, of course, is, can you tell us about the population? We do know it's bigger than Malta. It's quite a bit bigger than Malta, although it is considered one of Europe's smaller nations, but it's still quite a bit bigger than Malta.
Well, it is, I can tell you, it's 143 times bigger than Malta. That's my tourist, that's tourist guide in me, coming out. But yeah, I mean, it's very different. I would say it's like a parallel universe to Malta. Just everything is completely different. How people think, how people talk, how they go about the daily business quietly. And
is it a million people?
Yeah, it's over a million. It used to be 1.5 million. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bit less now. We have a big Russian population, mm-hmm, as well, besides the native Estonian population.
Left over from the Soviet Union time, I guess.
I mean, yes, a lot of these young Russian people, they have been born in Estonia, mm-hmm, and this is their country, yes, and this is the home they know. Mm-hmm. But initially they came, mm-hmm, most of them, mm-hmm, during the Soviet occupation.
Mm-hmm. Is there tension?
I think I would be lying if I said there is no tension at all. We don't have tension with people who respect our country, who respect the laws of Estonia, and who learn our language. We have no tension with these Russian people. And there are many of these. And then there are few who we have issues with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see. The reason I ask is because it's a situation possibly in every country now, including Malta, where people move from different countries and settle in others for whatever reason, and we all have to learn to live together, and there are different approaches. So Estonia, I doubt many Maltese people have visited or go to Estonia, or am I wrong?
Yeah, to my knowledge, not many.
So you said Estonian people are generally very different. It's like a parallel universe to Malta. Yeah. So as a parallel, could we say that to us Maltese who would know the Germans, very disciplined and efficient, the Scandinavians, perhaps Maltese people know a bit more about Sweden and Norway than they know about Estonia. Could you say that Estonian lifestyle is similar to the Scandinavian or German lifestyle for us to be able to picture what you're saying?
Yes. Scandinavian lifestyle. Estonia is very close to Finland, mm-hmm, so I would say Estonian and Finnish people have similar character. It's always very difficult to generalize because it's always based on stereotyping, and I'm sure there are Estonians who are completely different to what I describe, mm-hmm, at the moment. But let's say overall, Estonians are quiet and reserved. And shouting is seen as weakness, perhaps, and impolite, the least.
It's a different culture. And then there's, yeah, some Mediterranean cultures, including Malta's, where they approach, in general, the stereotype is that people approach life differently. What about do things work in Estonia, or do they work quickly and efficiently, or do you find that that is closer to maybe what happens in the Mediterranean?
Things work very efficiently, or maybe it's just in comparison when I go home and see how somehow effortlessly and quietly things work in Estonia. I mean, Estonia is really known for its IT. We have our e-government. We now have e-citizenship. I'm sure soon you can get married online. You can already vote online. Okay. Well, the marriage part was a joke, of course. Or who knows what they are coming up in Estonia these days. But people are very technologically advanced, I would say.
Which is why it makes the news when there's some sort of cyber attack and there's a bit of panic and they claim Russia is involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess when technology is so important, we in a way make ourselves vulnerable to cyber attacks.
Mm-hmm. And because of history, Estonia is part of NATO and has quite an international outlook in that respect. It also joined the European Union at the same time as Malta.
That's right, yes. And I think overall Estonians are still very much pro-European Union, like the Maltese, I get an idea. I mean, we have now countries that have perhaps different outlook to that. But Estonians, we still see the benefits in belonging to the European Union. There are diverse voices, of course, but overall, the official standing is that we are pro-European Union.
Let's have a listen to a bit of Estonian music chosen by our guest, Ingrid Iemois. Iwert and the Two Dragons, a song called Good Man Down.
Here is a story about a boy and a girl. She woke up a morning, felt alone in this world. Despite the love for her, he couldn't keep her from leaving again. She had to do it. She cried in the night, she brought her flowers in the daytime. She tried to forget the past and all her past crimes. Despite the love for her, he couldn't keep her from leaving again. She had to do it. How could you shoot a good man down? Leave without mourning. Broken hearted underground, like the others. The burden heavy as a rock. Ain't nobody gonna stop her. Go ahead and walk alone and regret it some elsewhere. He cried in the night, she got no flowers in the daytime. Gave up the fight while she was out committing new crimes. Despite the love for her, he couldn't keep her from leaving again. She had to do it. How could you shoot a good man down? Leave without mourning. Broken hearted on the ground, like the others. As around.
So, back here in Malta, Ingrid is in Malta in the year 2000s. You're settling down, the time is going past. What's your life like in Malta? How did it develop?
Well, at first it wasn't really that great. My plan was to study at the university here. I wanted to do my master's here. And I discovered that it was extremely difficult to get accepted at the University of Malta. And I remember a day, a particular register, when I went with my documents. They're all signed by notary and stamped, and, you know, everything was in order. And since I had graduated the oldest university in Estonia, and I was still young, perhaps I was a bit too confident now, thinking back, I didn't see any issue with my acceptance to the University of Malta.
Well, did you have to pay at the time?
Yeah. That was no issue. And it was, it was an issue, but I had the money for that. So, and I remember that registrar looked at me and said, "No, we have enough Nigerians here."
I'm sorry?
Yeah. And it was like wrong on so many levels.
That is quite shocking.
Of course, yes. Yeah. And you know, Colin, how many times I've been back there in my thoughts and I've had these witty answers, you know? Oh. It's like in my imagination.
That you wish you'd said.
I wish I'd said, you know. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I'm a bit ashamed to say that, but, you know, what the hell, you know? I mean, I was so shocked that I just quietly left the room. I couldn't accept. That's why I'm so angry with myself. I should have reported him. Mm-hmm. I should have done something about it. But when you're in a situation, when you're a new country, you don't have any friends. You don't have anyone to speak for you. Mm-hmm. You really have practically nobody. Then it's very difficult to judge from a place where I am now, you know, with a job, with great friends. It's a different place where I'm now. But I found a person at the university, Vicky Cremona.
Mm-hmm. He eventually became an ambassador as well.
Yes, that's right. She was the person who fought for me, who accepted me at the university.
How did you meet her? How did you know her?
No, I just knew her name. So I went and sat behind her door. She wasn't in, so I had to go back day after day. Every morning I was there and waiting for her. And after a few days, she came and we talked, and I never looked back.
Uh-huh. Was she involved in the course that you were going to do?
Yes, and she was my tutor for my master's thesis, and I'm eternally grateful to her. If it wasn't for her, I would have remained a Nigerian, probably.
That's such a strange thing to have said. Perhaps this person was referring to the fact that there were a few Nigerian students who were paying to study at the Maltese University, so we don't need any more foreigners.
Yeah.
But still, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to say, whether it's racist or not.
Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with a Nigerian?
In any case, absolutely, yes.
I mean, let the Nigerians who genuinely want to study and who are able to pay for the studies, let them come and study.
Yes, whoever they are.
What is the issue? Yeah, I don't think I've ever really forgiven him.
Well, I mean, it's a shocking situation, and I'm aghast, and as a Maltese person, I feel very embarrassed. But I'm also hoping that 15 years down the line, that kind of thing will not happen, at least not at the university. Although you do hear some about nasty comments said to foreign people who happen to be in Malta for whatever reason. So,
well, I'm sure Malta has come a long way, and when you say yes, there will always be people who embarrass us. But this does not define what Malta is, and this does not define who the Maltese people are. And now I know that more than ever. You always find stupidity in every country, so I wouldn't definitely single out Malta here. I just happen to be unlucky to find that ignorant person.
So you were here, you had this situation, but you got into university, and slowly, slowly you got to know people and you started to feel more at home and more at ease here. But at first you faced a little bit of perhaps suspicion or rejection.
Well, only initially. The story I told you. After that, absolutely not. My course mates were lovely. I have no negative memories of the university. Actually, I did another master's a few years later, so if it was terrible, I wouldn't have gone back, I guess. So I did another master's in integrated marketing communications a few years later when I was already working. No, only great memories.
And in life in general, I mean, after university, you know, going home, living wherever you were living, going shopping, etc.?
I mean, you just live like a normal person, I think.
I mean, for example, I've heard stories because you're foreign and you're buying vegetables or fruits or whatever, trying to purchase something, and there's a price for foreign people and a price for locals. Did you feel yourself singled out in that way at all, or were you lucky enough not to be?
I have no idea. Maybe I was charged a bit more. I hope not, but I'm no idea of knowing. But I used to live in Mostar, in Santa Margherita, which is a lovely place to live, and once people get to know you, they really like you. I mean, I had a Maltese boyfriend, so we lived together without being married. So I guess 15 years ago, this was still
quite a new thing,
a big taboo deal. Yeah. Now it happens every day, so nobody is really surprised by it. But I think once the people in the neighborhood realize that we're not really doing anything differently than them, that we just go about our daily lives, the novelty wore off and people no longer stared at me in a shop. So it was all really a sort of a very normal life. You go into that routine. Mm-hmm. You would go in every country.
And what did your family feel when you announced, "Oh, I'm going to live in Malta"?
They didn't really like it. First of all, I guess they didn't want me to move that far away. But secondly, I had a good job in Estonia. I had graduated university. I was on a sort of a career path. And in their opinion, it was silly to throw it away. That's how they saw it initially. But I think they knew that they wouldn't be able to convince me otherwise. So, you know what they say, if you love somebody, you have to let them go.
And was love part of the reason you came here as well as the studying?
Yes, I had met my boyfriend and later my husband when I worked here with the tourists. So I moved here for the university to do my master's and to be with him.
And what about your boyfriend's family? Did they make you feel welcome straight away? Was that also a good experience?
I mean, his family was fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, I don't even know what else to say. They made me feel really, really welcome. Particularly his mom. Mm-hmm. No, he was like my mom.
She gained a daughter then.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Estonian food, and then tell us about, this is a question I like to ask, a bit humorous, you know, Maltese food, how you got used to it, perhaps you started cooking it as well, or trying it out. And tell us a bit about Estonian food for us who don't know much about Estonia.
Well, Estonian food is really similar to German food, really. We eat a lot of meat, eat a lot of potatoes. It's generally quite heavy. We eat a lot of pork, for example, quite greasy, but it has to do with the climate, I guess, because if it's cold, you know, you need to sustain yourself, you need to keep yourself warm with some greasy food. But this is the traditional Estonian food. I'm not saying that all Estonians nowadays eat like it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, people are more health conscious nowadays. People eat fish and vegetables.
Right, it's like saying Malta's rabbit, but not everybody eats rabbit every day.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I mean, Estonia, we have the blood sausage, you know. Oh. But usually people have it once a year for Christmas.
Okay. And they give it to tourists.
And they give it to tourists probably for double the price.
Oh, Estonians do that too.
No, that was a joke.
Okay. Another bit of an aside. I'm assuming Estonia, snow, mountains. As a tourist guide, would you encourage people to visit Estonia?
Definitely, yes, I would encourage. I mean, snow, yes. Mountains, no.
No,
we don't. Estonians, we have hills, but like Malta, mm-hmm. Malta doesn't have any mountains either. So we do have something in common, after all. But yes, it has cold winters, generally. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a Maltese person, maybe for a first visit, mm-hmm. I would recommend to do it in summer. Okay. And then if they really loved it, maybe go back in winter. Mm-hmm. July and August are perhaps the best times to visit. I mean, Tallinn is lovely as a capital, but I would definitely go to Estonian countryside. It's really lovely. Those endless forests.
And lakes.
And rivers.
Swimming.
And swimming. For a Maltese person, it might be a bit cold, mm-hmm. perhaps, but Estonians do swim. And Estonian tourists who come to Malta in November, they still go swimming here, and they say water is just wonderfully, wonderfully warm. But yeah, but yes, Estonia has a lot to offer, particularly the countryside.
And Maltese food.
Maltese food. I have some firm favorites. I like Rosselforn, for example, which I quite successfully cook myself. I haven't mastered cooking the rabbit yet. I'm not a huge fan, but I do eat it occasionally. Of course, the Maltese people eat a lot of pasta. So for health and weight reasons, I'm trying not to eat pasta too often. And I love pastizzi, of course, but for who wouldn't? But for the same reasons, again, I try not to have it very often. I mean, Maltese food is lovely, but it's not the healthiest, perhaps.
Well, yes, in general, the greasiness, as you were saying earlier. Maltese, the language, did you feel the need to learn it along the way, and have you learned any of it?
Yeah, I'm still a student, I would say. I've tried many times, and I can converse in Maltese, but I'm far from fluent. And I guess this is a sort of my biggest regret, or shame, really, that I haven't become fluent in the Maltese language. To be honest, it's just so difficult to me, being a Semitic language. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no point of comparison at all. So, you know, that the verb in present and in past is like two different words. Mm-hmm. You know, that is very discouraging. That's a lot of exceptions. But I mean, I think it's a very interesting language. It's a very old language. And linguistically speaking, because I studied linguistics at the university as well, it is quite fascinating. I mean, the words, my favorite words, probably Shemsh, the sun, you know. This has this yes, it's really quite beautiful, you know, how it sounds. When it's spoken nicely and softly, mm-hmm. it is a very beautiful language indeed. And now I have a young son, 2 years, 7 months, and he's trilingual. So Estonian, English, and Maltese are all equally important languages in our family. Mm-hmm. So, and he speaks, I mean, he already speaks few words in all of them. So I'm hoping that with him, my Maltese will improve.
Have you been on any course or anything like that, or did you just pick it up as you went along?
No, in the past, mm-hmm. I've been on courses, but now recently, no, frankly, I just don't have any time for that.
And tell us a bit about the Estonian language.
Well, the Estonian language is very difficult as well. Maybe it's my bad karma, you know. I ended up in a country with equally very difficult language. It's a Finno-Ugric language. And it's similar to Finnish, There used to be many Finno-Ugric languages in the past, but most of them are extinct. Mm-hmm. So the biggest ones remaining nowadays are Estonian, Finnish, and then a distant cousin is Hungarian. Although Hungarians and Estonians definitely can't understand each other, mm-hmm. but linguistically there are some connections there. Estonian and Finnish, however, they can understand each other. It is a very complicated language.
I'm interested in history, and I'd like to just dwell on the point a little bit about, we mentioned the Soviet Union earlier and Estonia having been part of the Soviet Union, but Estonia wasn't a willing part of the Soviet Union as far as I know, right? And in fact, ethnically, Estonians and Russians are different. You're closer to the Finnish than you are to the Russians, right?
Yes, we're not similar to Russian people, meaning that we speak a completely different language. Mm-hmm. Russian language is a Slavic language and has a different alphabet. And I would say even character-wise, there are big differences between the Slavic and Finno-Ugric people in general. And definitely, no, we were not a willing member of the Soviet Union. I mean, who was, you know? I mean, there were all those countries that incorporated into that monstrous union, and nobody was really willing.
Well, some states, republics now, are still quite attached to Russia, which was the main driving force of the Soviet Union. Perhaps Belarus and certain areas in the south of Russia. But places like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia were actually occupied.
Yes, and I mean, let me just, you know, leave the question out there, you know, these countries that are still affiliated with Russia, you just need to look a bit deeper and perhaps see why and what are the reasons there. You know, it's not that simple. But the Baltic states, mm-hmm. surely, Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania, we are very unwilling.
And in fact, you had independence for a few years between, I believe, World War One and when the countries were first properly formed, and then 1940 or 41, I think, when the Second World War. And so you had a wonderful period of independence, and then you were incorporated into the Soviet Union, and then in 1990 mm-hmm. is when you became independent again.
Yeah, in the beginning of 1990s. I mean, yes, we had the taste of independence before the Russians came. So we knew what we were missing, mm-hmm. I guess. I don't think we really ever accepted the occupation in our hearts. Estonians can be really stubborn.
Yes, I read somewhere how Estonia, the Baltic states, because they had that taste of independence, they prospered after the fall of communism, while other independent countries following the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Soviet Union, countries such as Moldova, for example, because they had never had that taste of independence originally, they haven't prospered so much. There have been studies that compared the two regions.
Mm. Well, it's very interesting. You know, I cannot really comment on that. You know, this is not my expertise. I'm not sure if the prosperity was because of that past independence. I'm not sure. And there were difficult moments as well after we regained our independence. It wasn't all rosy. So we are fine now, but there were some difficult times as well. But now I can say that the standard of life in Estonia is definitely high.
Għedin tisamaw il-program Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li jxandar kullnar ta' tlita fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.
Ingrid Eomois, you are the head of the British Council and have been for 7 years.
as a director around 3 years, I think.
But you have worked for the British Council for...
That's right.
7 years. And tell us a little bit about your work over the years, culminating in this year with this very busy period, which I would assume is similar to the 2005 period when we had Chogham then, and you were already working for the British Council. Yeah. But now you're actually the director.
Well, the British Council is really quite a peculiar organization and very unique that is present in over 100 countries in the world. There isn't any other organization like that, a cultural organization. And we are in the business of cultural relations. So we are an apolitical organization, and we create a sort of trust and understanding between the people of the UK and elsewhere, in my case, in Malta then. So it's about cultural relations, it's about friendships, it's about education, arts, science, something that the UK has a lot of expertise, but we strongly believe in mutuality. So we believe we can always learn from our partner countries and become stronger as such.
And have there been mutual learning experiences from Malta towards the UK? I mean, we know of many British experiences here in Malta, but what about going the other way?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's definitely been some cross-fertilization. I mean, we've had British people coming here and working with the Maltese people. For example, last weekend here, we had a project called Walking Cities, and more about it will be revealed in the near future, where a Maltese writer, Abigail Zamit, and a British poet and novelist, Hannah Lowe, met and took a walk in Valletta that was recorded, discussing the issues around identity and displacement and their own work and migration, all in the context of Valletta. And I mean, this wasn't the British writer coming down and, you know, telling how things are or how things should be done. No, this was two creative people, two equals, coming together and working together.
Can I just clarify, the British Council isn't as such part of the British High Commission, or which is of course the British Embassy in Malta. There are two separate entities that cooperate, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, we are separate entities, but we are working very, very closely together in Malta, and the big picture is one for us, and the common, we have a common agenda. So there is definitely a very close collaboration between the British Council and British High Commission in Malta.
And the days of the British Council organizing English lessons or courses, those days are over, right? There's a different agenda nowadays.
In Malta, we don't have a language school, but elsewhere in the world, teaching English is still one of the main things that the British Council does. So it's very much what we do, just not in Malta, because it's a very small office here, and currently we do not have the capacity, we do not have a plan to go down that road.
So we're talking in November 2015, this is when the program's being recorded, and you mentioned the Walking in Valletta project a week ago. Tell us a little bit about Chogham.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a very exciting program for Chogham that I've been working towards with the help of my colleagues from Italy now for a while. I mean, there's this Walking Cities project that I mentioned, and on the cultural side, we are also bringing over a dance company called Stopgap that has both disabled and able-bodied dancers among them, and they are going to present a very interesting dance piece at Ziguzaig, the festival, the theatre festival for children and young people. And they are also going to present at the Youth Forum. Arts and disability is something that the British Council feels very strongly about it, and I'm glad to say we have a lot of expertise by now. And in addition to the cultural segments that I've just mentioned, we're also providing some really interesting, exciting speakers for the forums, for the business forum, for the women's forum that's happening for the first time in Malta, and we are very excited about that, and for the youth forum as well. So we are participating in the forums too.
And would the general public, people listening, would they be able to participate? They would definitely be able to come and watch the dance act that you mentioned. There'll be information in the press about where they're performing, etc. But what about the fora? Mm-hmm.
The fora, one needs to be accredited. I think one can apply for accreditation, but you'd have to check with the CHOGM task force, mm-hmm. who are in charge of the accreditation process. But I believe it is possible for young people, for example, being part of the youth forum. I think that the young Maltese people should definitely take the opportunity and to be part of it.
Once again, let's listen to some music from Estonia. Once again chosen by Ingrid, our guest today, on Campus FM's Minainen Baranin, Ewart and the Two Dragons. The song is called Pictures.
I remember when I still was young in the sun, I knew hardly any worries. Now the story's changed and though it's fading away, won't you stay until the daybreak? I was young.
Let's go back to talking about you. Is there an Estonian community that you are friends with and meet with regularly, or have you not felt the need to hang out with people who are also from your country?
Yes, there is an Estonian community. I'm not really sure how many Estonians are here. We have our own Facebook group, for example, so we know what we're up to. We meet a few times a year for Midsummer's Night Eve. There's a big celebration in Estonia. Mm-hmm. It's the 23rd of June, mm-hmm. I believe. And then sometimes we meet for Eurovision. A big event for Estonians and the Maltese. And I think some people meet for football as well. I'm not a huge fan, but you know, when Estonia is playing, you know, they meet up and they see the game together. I don't really have time to meet them as much as I would like, because I'm just too busy juggling work and parenthood and other things. But my best friend in Malta is Estonian.
And what are the things you absolutely love and adore about Malta? You mentioned the pastizzi earlier on. But can you elaborate a little bit about the things that you, as a tourist guide as well, talk about to foreign people about Malta, to encourage them to come here, and that you boast about now that you have spent a substantial part of your life here?
Mm-hmm. I love Valletta. I live in Valletta. I work in Valletta. I'm a huge fan of Valletta. I just really love the city. So I love the architecture. I like the people. And overall, it has a great vibe about it. I mean, overall, the history and the culture in Malta is so interesting, so rich, that I'm really quite proud to live in a country that has such long history.
I would understand that coming from an American, for example, where their history doesn't seem to be so long, although, of course, the Native Americans then would have a very long history. But in Estonia, surely you do have a long history as well, and beautiful architecture in Tallinn, or not. Maybe we really are so unique and wonderful, because everybody seems to say this about Malta.
I mean, Estonia has its own value and its own beauty, and I don't think really that by loving Malta, I would have to love Estonia any less. So I think it's possible to love two countries at the same time. That it's just different, you know, but they both have so much to offer. But since now Malta is my home, I very strongly believe that, you know, I should promote Malta and I should show it from the best possible angle. Yes. To the tourists when they come to Malta.
This leads me to another question I normally ask. If somebody asks you, Ingrid, where are you from? What do you say?
I still say I'm from Estonia. I usually say I'm originally from Estonia, but I live in Malta. So I have Maltese citizenship as well. I have dual citizenship, which I only apply for because I have to go to vote. And the obsession with voting is something you just have to love and hate about Malta at the same time. So now I'm part of that obsession, you know, and I'm a voter. So I feel I'm a true Maltese now. Mm-hmm. that I can vote. So, but in my heart, I'll always be an Estonian.
And the nasty question, the things you hate about Malta, we've already discussed a few negative things that you've perhaps passed through, very few apparently, which is great, but the things you hate, maybe the things you feel could get better in Malta, perhaps you have some advice on how to go about it?
Well, advice, I wouldn't go that far, you know, I don't think I'm an expert to give advice to the Maltese people how to improve their lives. I think they are doing a good job with it. But what I don't like, perhaps, is the fact that Malta is so overcrowded, which I have contributed to, of course, ironically, you know, by being a foreigner and moving here, so I'm not sure whether I should complain about it. the air quality, that's the pollution is an issue, because in Estonia the environment is very very clean, so it's a big difference.
You mentioned the environment. I mean, do you mean the perhaps rubbish and lack of cleanliness? Is that also an issue?
I mean, that not so much. I mean, it can bother you a bit, but I wouldn't really sort of single it out. But the air quality, you feel that the air you breathe, you know, is just good. It could be better. And one thing, maybe, I wish Malta was a little less political here, because here everything seems to have a political dimension. And it's not so in Estonia. You get used to it, but...
You said it's not so in Estonia.
Yeah.
So people aren't so partisan in Estonia about their party. Their one party, my party is perfect, yours is terrible, which is how the way a lot of people think here.
I think you find people like that as well, sort of the hardcore party people. You find them in Estonia as well, but not as many as here, in my opinion.
From your view,
of course,
yeah.
in my opinion, yeah, that is something that can be annoying at times, perhaps.
And you think Malta is on the right track, however. For example, you love Valletta, and Valletta is getting better, with restoration, new things being introduced.
Overall, yes. Well, there are still a lot of vacant properties in Malta, in Valletta and in Malta. I think I read in a newspaper recently that one-third of the properties in Malta on average are vacant. You know, this is a big problem. This is a problem that needs to be addressed somehow, in my opinion. So things are getting better, yes. But because I love Valletta, I want things to get better faster.
So finally, will you be staying in Malta for the foreseeable future?
Yes, definitely. I mean, my partner is Maltese. I mean, I got divorced from my husband, and I have a partner now, and we have a little son. So we have a beautiful big house in Valletta. So yes, I don't see a reason why I should move for now. But never say never. So who knows what future will bring.
Ingrid Iomois, Director of the British Council, Estonian but also Maltese, thank you very much for being on Minainen Baranin on Campus FM.
Grazie ħafna.
U dik kienet edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Minainen Baranin, fejn jiena kol il-fitz niltaqgħu niddiskuti it-tajjeb u dak li hu inqas tajjeb f'pajjiżna, ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni jew oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll tistgħu issibuh fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.